hope that your time with us will be beneficial, and the things that are said will only be found in God's Word. I want to talk with you tonight about the prodigal's brother. Just several weeks ago, we talked about the prodigal son. And you know, when I remember reading this parable and being surprised that it didn't end with the prodigal son, you know, being restored to the father. You know, it keeps going, and sometimes we don't notice that, because Jesus went on to tell about the prodigal's, you know, quote, good brother who had always remained with the father. And then, you know, think about that. You know, the parable is really not about the prodigal and his return to the father. It's about the brother, and the story of the prodigal himself is simply told to set stage for what Jesus needed to say about the elder brother. In fact, the story of the prodigal was the third step as Jesus sets the stage here to tell about this brother. Let's look at Luke chapter 15 and see how this stage is set here. Luke chapter 15, verses 1 and 2 says, "All the tax collectors and the sinners drew near to him, and the Pharisees and scribes complained, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with him.'" And so this story, and the other stories as well, the parable of the lost sheep and the parable of the lost coin, and here the parable of the prodigal son, these three stories were told to make a point with these Pharisees and tax collectors who were criticizing and critiquing Jesus for eating with tax collectors and sinners. Jesus here didn't first just jump into the parable of the prodigal brother. He first told about this man who lost one sheep out of 100, and when he found the sheep, he did what he and the neighbors would be expected to do. They rejoiced. And then Jesus told about the woman who lost the one silver coin out of 10, and what did she and her neighbors do when they found it? They rejoiced. And of course, these things have to do with their livelihood and with their money, and you know, they of course could rejoice with those things, and certainly the scribes and Pharisees would be among those who would rejoice when a lost sheep was found or a lost coin was found. And it's amazing that the compassion that one can have toward a lost sheep or a lost coin. I don't know how many of you watched some of the Super Bowl ads, but there was an ad that was not telecast for GoDaddy.com. And it was about a dog that was lost. And the ad, if you have seen it, involves, you know, people that are looking for this dog. And this dog looks haggard, and it looks like it doesn't know where it's supposed to be. And, of course, it kind of makes you feel sorry for the dog. And when the dog finally gets home to its owners, the woman takes the dog and says, "Oh, we're so happy that we found you, and the music and the violins are playing." And she says, "Because I'm selling you on this new website that I built with GoDaddy.com." And then the whole thing just collapsed. You know, people were in an uproar about this, how horrible it was that you... I thought it was kind of funny myself, you know, because it was kind of sarcastic. But, you know, there were no actual dogs that were hurt in the filming of this commercial. But people loved that dog, and because of the outcry, you know, they took the thing off the air, and it never aired. But if you want to go look for it and be dismayed, you can do that. But, you know, here is compassion that is paid to the attention of this fictitious dog who was never lost in the first place. And here, Jesus tells the story about the lost sheep and the lost coin. And you can imagine, you know, this is something that we can all relate to. We can all be happy that a lost sheep is found. We can all be happy. We all know what it's like to lose money and then find it. And so that's a good thing. But then, here is Jesus talking about saving somebody who is a person. Saving one of these people that he associates with, these tax collectors and sinners that they wouldn't want to be around. That's a different story entirely. But Jesus describes himself in this way in Luke chapter 19, verse 10. "The Son of Man has come to seek and save that which is lost." And Jesus is not talking about a lost sheep or a lost coin when he says that he's come to seek and save that which is lost. He's talking about us. He's talking about sinners. He's talking about those that need the physician, those that are sick. And this was a point that needed to be driven home with those that would continually criticize Jesus because of his desire to do exactly what he had come to do, and that was to seek and save the lost. And so that is the background that we see here as Jesus encounters these people who are so critical of him. And the thrust of these stories is really a stark contrast between their attitude as scribes and Pharisees and God's attitude that he has toward things that are lost. And so we want to look at the second half of this parable to learn the proper perspective that we need to maintain. Let's go ahead and read. We'll go ahead and read the entire parable and the aftermath here so it's fresh on our mind. In verse 11 of Luke chapter 15, it says, "There was a man who had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the property that is coming to me.' And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son had gathered all and took a journey to a far country, and there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. And so he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into the fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, and I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants.' And he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced and kissed him. And the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servant, 'Bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again, and he was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate." So this is the break that you usually hear in this parable. It's, you know, the lost son is home and now he's found. They're going to have a party. And so, you know, this is all good, and it certainly represents the love that the Father has for us when we wander away from home. And we talked about this in the last lesson, that we have to get to a point that we come to ourselves and realize the kindness of our Father and what the Father offers, and that we have to submit to the Father and be willing to be his servant. And so the young man comes back home and is greeted by his father, and his father accepts him back, whether or not he deserves that. And so this is a great ending to this parable. It's not the end. The story goes on. In verse 25, "His older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing, and he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant." Well, one of the things it meant is that it's not your party, because you're not in there. But he's going to be invited. It says he called one of the servants, asked what these things meant. He said to him, "Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf, because he has received him safe and sound." But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him. But he answered his father, "Look, these many years I have served you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him." And he said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that I have is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive, and was lost and is found." So you start to see some attitude problems here as the young man is saying, "Well, what's going on here? Well, there's a party for your brother. We want you to come in." And he tells his father, "You know, this son of yours did these things. I don't understand why you're having this party." And you know, dads, when you come home from work and your wife tells you, "Do you know what your son did today?" You know what that means is that he did something that she didn't like, and now she is associating whatever he did is on your side of the family. You know, that your son did this, and here the prodigal brother does not recognize his brother as a brother. He said, "Father, this son of yours." It's like, I'm disavowing any kind of relationship with him. I'm not calling him my brother, but he is your son, and your son is the one that has made these bad choices, and you're rewarding him for the bad choices that he made. That is the attitude of the older brother. So what is it that we need to learn from the example of the elder brother? First thing that we need to learn is we need to have a proper perspective on our responsibilities. The brother is quick to point out all of the commandments that he had followed in all his years of service. Yet, he is not so quick to follow the entreaty and encouragement of his father to rejoice at the return of his brother. Have you ever thought about that before? Number one, he says, I've never disobeyed your commandment, which I don't believe could have been true. But at least in his mind, he thinks it's true. Yet his father is telling him, come on in. He's saying, no. Well, he's not following the example. He's not following the entreaty of his brother right here. So he's saying one thing, I've always obeyed you, but I'm not going to do what you say. But that doesn't make any sense, does it? So he is not going to take the encouragement of his father to rejoice at the return of his brother. He also had forgotten that all of his years of service did not leave him responsibility free. Just because maybe he didn't like his father's approach on this matter or some issue. And the Pharisees certainly are the ones that are being talked to here. The problem here is not the sinner who realized that they were a sinner and came back to the Father. That person has already taken care of their problem because they ran away from home, they came back, and they restored their relationship to their father. But here is the one who is at home who still doesn't have a relationship but doesn't realize they don't have a relationship. So the Pharisees had this problem. They were so caught up in the things that they were doing and the things that they believed, that there were some things that they were ignoring that didn't need to be ignored. And Jesus points that out in Matthew chapter 23, verse 23. And many of the instructions to the scribes and Pharisees start out the same way. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you pay tithes of mint and anise and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. And so they were very good at making sure that they weighed out, you know, the right measure of the spices and things that they were to give up. Very careful about giving their tithes, but when it came to the way that they treated others, not so good at that area. And we don't need to make that same mistake, otherwise Jesus will have the same reaction to us. I'm going to say, Randy Jameson, hypocrite. Scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. You're not doing, you pick and choose what it is that you want to do. And that is the mistake that they are making. We can't forget the commitment that we make to our Father when we submit to Him in baptism. And in Luke chapter 9, Jesus tells us that once we put our hand to the plow, then we don't need to look back. What does that mean? Well, it means that, you know, once you start a job, once you start a task, that you need to follow through on it. In verse 62 of Luke chapter 9, Jesus said to him, no one who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is fit for the kingdom of God. Once our hands are on the plow, they need to stay there. We need to keep working. We need to keep up our responsibilities. And unfortunately, the scribes and Pharisees knew they had some responsibilities, but they weren't keeping all of them. And that is the focus of these parables. Hebrews chapter 3, verses 3 through 11, demonstrate that there will be a day that when we rest from our labors. But it's not today. There's not any of us here that need to take a break from our labor. Hebrews chapter 4, verse 3 says, For we have believed to do enter that rest as he has said, so I have sworn in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. Though the works were finished from the foundation of the world, he has spoken in a certain place on the seventh day. In this way, God rested on the seventh day from all his works. And again in this place, they shall not enter my rest. Since therefore it remains that some must enter it, and those to whom it was first preached did not enter because of disobedience, he designates a certain day, saying in David, today, after such a long time, as it has been said, today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. For if Joshua had given them rest, he would not afterward have spoken of another day. There remains, therefore, a rest for the people of God. For he who has entered his rest has himself also ceased from his works as God did from his. I think it's very clear what is being talked about here. And the day that we will enter that rest is the day that we die. And we will not be doing his works anymore. But we need to keep doing what we can with the time that God has blessed us with. Verse 11 of Hebrews 4 says, let us therefore be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall according to the same example of disobedience. So, no matter how old we are, no matter how tired we are, no matter how busy we are, no matter what happens around us, we have to continue to work and fulfill our responsibilities. That's one of the things that we can learn from this parable, is this is a person that had forgotten some of his responsibilities. He said, I've kept your commandments all the time, yet I'm not going to do this thing. He didn't remember his responsibility to his brother. And so we don't have the right to pick and choose and say, well, this is too much. No, I'm not going to do this. We have to continue our commitment to God. And we need to continue in that wherever it leads us. And we have to understand that sometimes, as in this situation, it may lead us to being supportive of others. And he should have been supporting his brother and being thankful that his brother came back, even though he considered his brother to be the worst of sinners. And he probably had some kind of disrespect and envy and jealousy. He's gone, he's taken his money, and he's lived it up, and now he's crawled back home and probably had all kinds of judgmental thoughts about that. He didn't have the attitude that the father had. That I'm happy that he came back. I'm happy that he realized his mistake. I'm happy that he didn't totally destroy himself, but he was still in the frame of mind where he could come back and be restored. And he didn't seem to care about his brother. He needed to rejoice just as others were rejoicing. We need to have a proper perspective on our responsibilities and upon our service. The older brother's mistake, one of them, was forgetting that all that he had came from the Father. It sounds to me like his shoulders are going to be sore from reaching around and patting himself on the back so much. Because he's talking about, I've done this and I've done that and you've never done this for me. Just like the prodigal son, the older brother was also a recipient of the Father's grace. And by focusing on his time out in the field, the older brother neglected to realize that all this time that he had spent working did not entitle him to all his father's possessions. And it seems like he has a sense of entitlement. And certainly we see a lot of that today in our society, where people are still entitled to this and that for something that they really don't have a hand in. But society has made them feel like they're entitled to this and that. The Pharisees and scribes had a problem with this. In Luke chapter 18, we read about the Pharisee and the publican. And I mentioned to some of you before, when I read this, I think about the Pharisees just writing a resume. It's like he's posting all this on LinkedIn, bragging about everything that he's done. God, aren't you lucky that somebody like me is serving you? The Pharisee stood and prayed thus in himself, God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even this tax collector. I fast
twice a week, I give tithes of all that I possess. And I imagine everybody that was standing around him, listening to what he said, they must have been very impressed or pretty disgusted. But he's not disgusted with himself, is the point. He builds himself up. He thinks that his good works has made him better than anybody else, and he goes and lists them. Has lots of bullet points. And him and people like him did not recognize their own unworthiness and their need for God and His grace. It's as if they believed that the Father owed them something. I believe we all understand that. We understand that principle. But it's something that we have to continue to think about. We don't ever want to make the mistake that we begin to focus on everything that we have done. Everything I've done for God. Everything I've done for His kingdom. Everything I've done for the brethren. Does God need anything from us? Paul said in Acts chapter 17, verse 25, talking about the unknown God and telling those who were so good at worshiping all the idols about the one that they should be worshiping. He says, He is not one that is worshipped with men's hands as though He needed anything, since He gives to all life, breath, and all things. Doesn't sound like Paul thinks that God needed anything. The one that you need to worship is the one that doesn't really need you. He's still God. He's not worshipped with men's hands. And so we don't need to make the mistake of focusing as the prodigal brother did, the other prodigal, of focusing on everything that he has done for his father. Rather, where we are and where we have been is being a recipient of the love and grace of God. We also can learn from the elder brother the proper perspective on our relationship. We've already hinted at this before, but the older brother couldn't see anything more in his brother who had returned as a person who had wasted his father's money running around with prostitutes. Is that who his brother was? It's pretty negative take on his brother, isn't it? This is a parable, so we're not given a whole lot of backstory here. But you think about the relationship that siblings have. And when it doesn't have to be siblings, it can be any relationship that we have. But when we focus in on one event, or focus on one thing that made us mad, we can forget about everything else that ever happened. And I know sometimes those that are in marriage counseling, the counselors try to get the husband and wife to think, well, what was it that you that attracted you together in the first place? Get them to talk about things that happened in the past that were good, because they're so focused in on whatever the problem is. Is there something good that you can think about? Is there something good that happened? Is there something that attracted you together? But the perspective that the older brother has about his brother is he is wasteful. He took the money. He wasted it. And I would never do such a thing. And not only did he take the money, but he spent it with prostitutes. And if you go back and read the account, it never says that he spent the money with prostitutes. That's just something that the brother threw in there. I assume he did that, because he does everything bad. So, older brother doesn't have a great perspective on this relationship. This was not just some nameless sinner. This was a young man that was a son to the father, and it was a brother to the brother. And the father says to the older brother, this brother of yours was dead and has begun to live. He was lost and is found. And the father essentially said, of course I did this. Of course I killed the fatted calf. And what did you expect me to do? Our closest kin is back from the dead. Why wouldn't we celebrate? So what did the Pharisees do? When the Pharisees looked at people, what could they see? Tax collector, sinner. They never saw wife, husband, brother, sister. You know, all the other attributes, all the other things that went on in their life, they focused on one thing. That person's a sinner. That person's a tax collector. And anybody that's a tax collector is a sinner. Everybody knows that. So they didn't see brethren in the nation of Israel. Now, they could see the value of a lost sheep, and they could see the value of a lost coin, but they couldn't see the value of their brethren being lost and being found. You know, sometimes people, you know, talk in terms of the brotherhood of man. You've heard that expression before. And, you know, what do people mean by that? That we have a kinship with all men and women. We all descended from the same place, didn't we? We all descended from Adam and Eve and Noah's family. And so what's the point? That we're not any different than anybody else. Or we shouldn't consider ourselves to be any different because we all came from the same place. And we have all came from the same place in a lot of different ways. Not just our origin, but also our activity. Because we have all chosen to sin at one time or another. And because we've all chosen to sin, then we all need access to the same remedy. And so the Pharisees needed to realize that. You know, these people that I'm so critical of, these Pharisees and tax, these tax collectors and these sinners, are the same as scribes and Pharisees. You know, they knew enough history to know that if they believed the scriptures that they tried to hold to. So we all need salvation and grace from the Father. And God loved all of us so much that He sent Jesus to die for us. John 3:16, God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whoever believes in Him should not perish and have everlasting life. 1 John 2:2, He Himself is the propitiation for our sins, and not for ours only, but also for everybody that looks just like you. That doesn't say that. Everybody in the Elliottsville church. No, it's for the whole world. Also for the whole world. And so, we need to see from this perspective, we need to see what the scribes and Pharisees did not see and see how important the souls that were walking and talking close to them really were, how much value they all had. But they didn't assign value to those who had occupations that they didn't care for or were part of a race they didn't care for. So the elder brother should have been rejoicing when his brother came home instead of complaining about what are you doing? Why are you wasting all this food on him? He has fallen and has now returned. That is the thing that needs to be an event. And we need to have a proper perspective on our blessings. Because the older brother had a mistaken perspective regarding his service. He also had a wrong perspective on his blessings, that he deserves blessings, but the younger son deserves punishment. Anybody ever have that kind of attitude? That when something happens to you that deserves punishment, then you want whoever is giving out the punishment to be a little lenient with you. Because you understand why you did what you did. You can always tell your mom and dad, well, you know, I know that I shouldn't have done what I did, but here's the reason that I did, here's the situation I was in, and I hope that you will consider all these things when you're trying to decide what you're going to do to punish me. But when it is my brother, you need to lay down the law on him because he should have known from what I did before that he shouldn't have done that.
What's the problem? There's a perspective problem that I deserve blessings, but everybody else doesn't deserve that. I, the older brother, I deserve everything that you have to give me that's good, but my younger brother, he deserves punishment. How dare the father give this younger unworthy son a seed, and you neglect me when I've been here all this time? I've just been waiting. Can't you see I've been hungry? I've been looking at that calf for years. The blessings did not belong to the elder brother. They belonged to the father, and the father could do with those, and he could bestow them upon whoever he wanted to in any way that he wanted to. The elder brother had no right to tell the father what to do with those blessings. Whether it was the blessing of a feast of a fatted calf, or it was giving the property to somebody else, or giving the money away to the younger brother when he wanted it to go away and spend it wastefully. The father had control of those things. They belonged to the father, and it was the father's, and he could do with it what he wanted to. And certainly that is the point of the parable that was read this evening in Matthew chapter 20, when the laborers in the vineyard, were called at different times of the day. And at the end of the day, whether they were called late in the day or early in the day, they all got what they agreed to. And the ones that had worked longer complained about the ones who had just come in. And the point there is, why are you complaining? I gave you what it was that you agreed to do. I gave you the wages for which you agreed to work. What's the problem here? Well, people are selfish. People are envious. They look at what others get, and one of the worst things that can happen in business is for everybody else to learn what everybody else is making. Somebody leaves that out on their desk, woe to the person, the HR person that left out that spreadsheet so everybody in the office can know what everybody else is making. But that's what we see in Matthew chapter 20. People here, they agreed to work for a wage and they got what they agreed to and they don't like it. But the point here is that the landowner goes out and he calls all these people in who are not working, they're not able to work, and he gives them a job. They need to be thankful for the job that they have and for the blessings that result from that. And certainly, we can't forget that everything that we have belongs to God, and He can grant blessings. He can grant He grant the things upon us to whomever He wishes. And we need to count our blessings, as the song says. The elder brother counting his blessings. Does it sound like he's going to go to bed at night and kneel down by the side of his bed and start listing off all the wonderful things that he has? Or is he going to be praying that lightning will strike about in the field where his brother's standing? Not a great attitude. We don't need to make the mistake of thinking that our blessings are here because I deserve them. And if the elder brother had the proper perspective on the blessings, then this conversation would not have happened. And if the scribes and Pharisees had the proper perspective on all of these different areas, on their responsibilities, on their service, their relationship with their fellow man, and on the blessings that they receive from God, then Jesus would not have needed to tell these parables. But He talks to them the way He talks to them many, many, many times, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Because you think that you're something, but you're not. You don't have the right attitude toward your fellow man. You don't have your right attitude toward God. Because if you had the right attitude toward God, your attitude toward your fellow man would be a little different. So what kind of perspective do we have? I'm sure that if somebody here lost their favorite pet and then found it and then posted all over Facebook, it'd be 100,000 likes, everybody would be happy about that and we would rejoice. And if somebody lost their purse or their wallet,
with $100 in it and it was returned to them, that would be something that would probably knock you over. But you would rejoice with them that that was actually returned and actually still had money in it. But how much more when our father has lost one of his children and that child returns to him, either by becoming a Christian or being restored to the faith. What should we be doing? Well, I think most of us would be rejoicing with God and the angels in heaven when something like that happens. So we wouldn't be like the scribes and Pharisees with our arms folded and saying, well, if God really knew what's going on with them, wouldn't be so quick to be accepting of them. For God knows everything. God knew everything that the younger brother did, whether the older brother did or not. What we need to do is maintain the proper perspective on all these areas and certainly not lose the point and overlook the point of this parable. Really, the focal point of these parables about the lost thing is the attitude of the Pharisees. Don't know that it changed many hearts and minds. But if we have the proper heart and mind, it can change us. If we'll have the attitude that Jesus is calling us to have. Hopefully these things will be useful to you as we try to live our life as Christians and keep proper perspective in our life. If we can help you in any way to do that, we'd invite you to come as we stand together and sing.